League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm the English Summer, and this is Drop Shot. I was up with the lark, but the rain is horrendous and today looks like a washout. And the forecast for the rest of the week is variable, to say the least. I really hope that this isn't going to be one of those British summers. As I watched the deluge, I wasn't sure what to do, but then Gary rang and told me to meet him at Barn Station, as he has a surprise for me. I like surprises, although if it's from Gary, how good can it be?
Mr. Levy, what time do you call this?
I call this me being early and you being on Gary time.
Right, I'll show you where we're going.
Isn't the National Tennis Centre around here?
It is. Do you know where it is?
I always thought it was near the Roehampton Club on Roehampton Lane.
Go left here.
But obviously it's not. Oh, is it up Priory Road or...?
It is.
Okay, so can I drop you off in rehab first?
You can.
Get you over your lateness addiction.
Excuse me, nurse, I'm addicted to being late.
You are, though.
I'm an addict.
Oh, look, we're going to catch the train
quick,
lights.
Go quick, before the gates come down.
Oh, okay.
You'll get through there easy. Oh, no, it's the next one.
Doesn't matter. It's the next one. So, yeah, come on, what's going on? What's going on? Now we're stuck at the lights. I need to know.
So we were at Surbiton recording some content yesterday, and then...
Oh, that was a good interview with Jay Clark, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And also with your new mate, Jubby. And, I just got talking to someone there about an idea that we've had whirring around for a while. But obviously these things take time to, you know, to get off the ground. And, you know, it takes time to, you know, get people to understand what you're trying to do. So we continued the conversation yesterday at Surbiton and then into last night, and then I got a message said, yeah, look, this is really good, actually, we want to do it with you, can you meet us at the NTC for 11 a.m. to start shooting? And then I got another message saying, actually, make it 1 p.m. and I was like, even better, because it means I get to have a lie in. And now here we are en route to the NTC, and when we get there, said player will be waiting in the car park for us.
Okay, so hold on. It's got to be someone we've been talking to that we like as a person and think they're interesting and they talk well. Is it Jay?
You'll find out when you get there.
Oh, come on, tell me.
Christmas Eve.
I saw you talking to his brother, I think, last night. That's it, isn't it? I think I worked it out.
You're the sort of child who would touch the present and go, oh, is it a football, Mum?
Well, it's obvious when it's a football, isn't it? I don't need to touch that.
No, it's a bowling ball, Kerry.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. Well, this is very exciting, Gary. I'm almost going to forgive you for your
lateness. If only it wasn't for these railway barriers, we'd be there by now.
Yeah, we're
late. There goes the train.
Yeah, we're late, and then they'll just go, yeah, no, we don't want to work with you.
This is the train. Now, let's hope those barriers go up.
You've really made this an audio experience.
I know, it's great, listener. Isn't it? But also, what I think is funny is that we're going to meet someone because we were meant to be watching this player train on the grass today, and lo and behold, in true grass court fashion, what's it doing?
Raining. It's England. It's summer.
It's raining heavily. So I don't think we're going to see much tennis today. There goes another train. You train spotters out there, we're off.
We are.
Watch the cyclists.
Well, I always
they have the rights cyclists. Too, Kerry. Watch the speed bump. Lights have gone green. You can go now.
Thank you. This feels like my driving test.
Yeah, heel start. Easy on the acceleration. Just feel the bite in point on your clutch.
That's so funny.
All right, continue. What's the speed bump?
Yeah.
Right, so we're just going to go past the Priory Club and then it's on the right. Welcome to the National Tennis Centre. Just continue round. And there he is to start.
It is Jay.
There you go. Right, and now let's just park up and then we'll go see him.
So Jay's down here in court five and he's practicing with Francis Tiafoe, big foe. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Amazing.
Excellent. One of our guys from Series 1.
That's amazing. Watching them on court, hitting the ball at close quarters, they really give it a biff, you know.
But ferocious.
Ferocious, but it's also really friendly and relaxed. And I think that's what you don't see with all these sports, is that all these guys know each other and a lot of them are friends and they get on and they practice together. It's a really interesting look into behind the scenes of tennis for me.
Right, well, let's get on court five then.
Okay.
As we've been watching Jay train here down at the National Tennis Centre, you've had balls hit at you. You've had all sorts go on. But you're making friends, right?
Yeah, that's what I do. I make friends, I think. Yeah, it's really funny because Jay's knocking up with Francis Tiafoe. And I decided to take my first picture of Francis when he was doing a smash. And I thought he wasn't noticing. And he just twisted his racket in his hand and the ball came flying at my head. And he burst out laughing. So, yeah.
Good thing you were too small to hit.
I'm a small target these days. No, it's good. What amazes me is how much fun they have out here. You know, you're seeing Francis is laughing, they're trying shots all the time. Jay's hitting these incredible shots. They're both jeeing each other up. And you don't see this side of tennis, that it is actually a very enjoyable game for these guys.
Mm. Yeah, they are. I think they're just finishing up now.
Good fun. I'm glad you saw a sneak peek. We'll get to it.
Do you mind if we record you boys while you sat down?
You said what?
Do you mind if we record you while you sat down?
No. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. For sure.
I thought you were saying no, you don't mind.
Yeah. I'm playing well, like Sunday's coming.
Because last summer you did well in Biggington and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, rain. I played 3 matches in a day last year at the Charlie.
Singles?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So how do you two know each other then? What's your...
We play tennis.
Oh dear, all right. You met each other when you were younger?
No, I met him when I was like...
13, and you were playing against each other,
13,
right?
Yeah, 13.
12,
yeah.
13, somewhere.
Like teen tennis and tubs.
Yeah.
And so the 14s.
Who was winning?
We have a 1-1 head record.
You split, really?
Yeah, we split.
We're going to play again at Queens.
Tie break?
A quick one.
Yeah, yeah.
We got it. I'm just putting serious pressure.
Yeah, we'll speak.
Yubby, are you going back or no? Are you going back to school or no? Balls, how you feeling? Broken, huh? Broken. Same here.
Good playing, bro.
Good fun. How much did I pay for the lesson?
So Francis, you're gonna subscribe to Dropshot?
100%. I'll do that as soon as I get to the house. In Wi-Fi.
Jay's already subscribed, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Jay's subscribed, haven't you?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Well, that's just, I don't know what it is, but we seem to be breaking boundaries and barriers and and seeing another face of tennis. I had no idea they have this much fun.
I know, I want to be a tennis player now.
Oh, luckily, I think I've still got it. So, you know, I just threatened them with my forehand there at the end. I love seeing Jay so relaxed because, you know, we saw him yesterday and he lost and it was hard for him. But it's great to see him the day after a loss
And he's out there whacking the ball around with TFO, yeah, having a great time. And TFO obviously respects him and thinks he's a great guy. And I love watching them trade off with each other.
The thing is as well is that they've had all that fun, but obviously they're working. And now you see Jay, the work that goes in behind the scenes away from the court is that he's off to start serve analysis from his time in Paris. And they're going to go over that while we sit down and, you know, go over a few things ourselves. But it just shows that there's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of hard work. Look at that rain outside. That's grim.
I'm glad we're not at Surbiton today. I've noticed, you know, you having brought us down here today, that you get on very well with one particular man, Mr. Francis TFO.
Yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that everyone gets along with. But no, he makes it really easy. He always keeps it light. Practices are fun. And yeah, it's just, he hasn't changed, you know, even though he's obviously had a lot of success at a really early age. Some people might get big-headed by it, but he's always been like that, you know, since I think we met when we were 13. You know, he's always loud. And nah, he's just a really nice guy to be around.
Yeah, he seems like a lot of fun. And that's what I really found was great to see, was you really enjoy knocking the ball around. You love tennis.
Yeah, I think that's maybe something we were taught from our parents or, you know, coaches at an early age, that you're not looking when you pick up a racket to play at Wimbledon. You know, you fall in love with the sport and then you became good at it. It's very rare, I think, in anything that, you know, you get good at it and then you fall in love with it. For us, you know, I know as well, he used to play a lot with his brother. I used to play a lot with my brother, and just countless hours, you know. Not really any meaning behind it a lot of the time, just hitting balls, you know, trying trick shots, all that stuff. So, yeah.
When you're finishing up today, you were doing tie breaks with Francis and you won the final tie break and then he wouldn't let you go.
Yeah, no, that's a common thing. You never leave the court after you've lost the last one. So, no, I think it's the same. Yeah, everyone around my age that's really good, we all have that attitude. You know, you never leave the court on the last one. So, no, it's nice. It's really nice.
Do you make a lot of friends amongst the other tennis players? Are there people that you get on well in particular with? Do you keep yourself to yourself? How does it work?
No, I don't think there's too many guys that keep themselves to themselves or, you know, take themselves too seriously. A lot, I think, you'd have to maybe go down to like 60 or 50 on the next gen to find someone I didn't know and that I don't get along with. We've all been really good friends talking for maybe under 10 or under 11 competitions, you know, starting back in Brestway. So yeah, I think everyone's socialised, you know, you go for dinner certain nights with people and yeah, I guess it's a really nice atmosphere, to be honest, on the Challenger Tour. Like with all the guys I know, we all came up together and we're all at a similar ranking, so it's nice.
So Jay, I wanted to talk about your experiences of growing up with tennis, and you were the number one at 14. How did it feel, and how did you feel you had to establish your position?
Yeah, it was a strange situation for me to be in, because I never really played a whole lot in Europe. I only ever played, you know, like normal national tournaments, you know, winter nationals, summer nationals in the UK. A lot of doubles and stuff, you know, even with my dad, my brother, some mix of my sister. And then traveling out into Europe, it was totally a new world, you know, different cultures, different foods, things I'd never seen before. I'd never even really thought about taking tennis like 100% seriously to any level past my own age. And yeah, when I actually started playing, I realized that I'm actually just as good as these guys, if not better. But when you first step out, you're almost like, ooh, you know, you're not sure of your level. You think everyone's a lot better than what they are. So yeah, when I reached number one in Europe in the 14s, that was a big moment where I realized that I am this good. You know, I've done this off not a whole lot of information and stuff from the outside. Just me and my family have done this together.
How important is family to you? Because in the tennis world, you see these almost like dynasties of families. And from what I can see of you, it's a very important part of your world and of your career.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I say, tennis is only a sport, but you know, family goes way beyond that. And you know, I wouldn't be who I am today without them. You know, they've always done the best by me. You know, they've always wanted me to succeed. You know, we went out, they went without a lot for me to sometimes go to some events to play, to do my best. You know, it didn't always go well either, and you know, that was the sacrifices we kind of learned to make when we were younger. But no, like I said, everything that I've done so far is down to them.
So your father started off coaching you, didn't he?
Yeah, my dad started off coaching me, my sister and my other brother. My other sister as well played, but she doesn't play anymore. Yeah, just at a local club in Derby where we lived. We're actually like 50 metres away from the club. And yeah, we just go down there and play for hours. And like I said, there was never a goal on it. There was never, you know, you'll play at Wimbledon one day. We were just down at the club having a lot of fun.
So do you think that was instilled in you from a very early age, that even though you're a professional, that you still have to find a way to enjoy it at the same time?
Yeah, definitely. When you know my dad played football, bit of basketball and all this stuff, he always said that he felt he did his best when he enjoyed it. And the same, I mean, if you ask anyone in a normal, like non-sporting job, if they love what they do, I'm sure that it's more productive.
So why did you choose tennis as the sport that was going to be your thing? Was it just something that happened?
Yeah, like my sister played before I did, and she got to a good level. But I guess tennis was the one that spoke out to me, because I got offers from Nike to sign, you know, Wilson, all these companies that, you know, the best guys in the game are working with. But, you know, I also played a lot of football, nothing to any serious level, but just messing around and having fun with that. But yeah, tennis was the one where the opportunities came in sooner.
Does that turn your head? How do you keep your feet on the ground?
It was strange, obviously, one of those things. Like I said, we didn't have a lot when we were little, so, you know, things we get for Christmas would be, you know, Rafa Nadal, you know, T-shirt, or, you know, Roger Federer kit, you know, bandanas, wristbands. So these were like presents for us. So when obviously they came to me and said, we want to sign you, and, you know, we'd be interested in paying you to wear our clothing, obviously, to 14-year-old, that's unbelievable. And even, you know, signing with brands now, the fact that they want to be associated with me when a lot of the players that I grew up watching was wearing their kit, it's still pretty cool, yeah.
And do you think having your family around you kept your feet on the ground? I take it you didn't get into becoming Billy Big Time at any point.
No, none of that, definitely. They've always been there and they always will be, you know, as part of my team in some shape or form. And yeah, I don't really think it's an issue for me getting, like I say, too big or something like that.
Because a lot of people get this idea that it's a privileged sport, tennis, and you seem to be the antithesis of this, that you have had to work through things. How difficult has that been?
Yeah, it's been tough. I think if you have some kind of life experience off the court, I definitely think it can help you on the court in certain situations during a match, or, you know, you just have something what you can dig from. You know, I want to do this, you know, for my family, or I want to do this for, you know, someone in your life. And yeah, for me, there's always been a reason to do it, to always work hard, to get up in the morning, you know, and it obviously helped that I loved the thing I was doing. So it never really felt like a job.
So also, you had to take time out from the game, even though you got to a certain level. I'd really love to know how that affected you and what actually happened.
Yeah, I got to a really good level, and one of the sponsors actually dropped out through, you know, a circumstance. And yeah, basically I was just left playing, I think one year it was maybe 10 tournaments for the whole year. We couldn't afford to keep funding, like keep buying the membership at the place we were training at, so that stopped. So obviously the gym, like the swimming pool, all these things that I had access to stopped. The tournaments got cut, so we were training outdoors. And yeah, we were always trying to stay ready for another opportunity that came, and luckily, like I said, towards back end of the year we got help again. But it was tough seeing a lot of the guys that I was beating a few months ago playing, you know, junior slams off wild cards, you know, going deep in futures, knowing that I was as good as them but I wasn't getting those chances. Yeah.
Do you feel that you have to find a way to dig deep, or did you even think about packing it in?
I never thought about packing it in. I knew I knew I was good, and a lot of people obviously told me, and the things I'd achieved, you know, up until the age of even 14, you know, some people obviously dream to do. And we were always kind of smart about the sport. We knew a lot of things. People are playing longer. And obviously being British helps, because there's a lot of good opportunities that, you know, brands and, you know, cool companies want to be associated with you as well. So I was never going to stop. It was just one of those things, you know, how long do we wait? And obviously it's tough at that age because you just want to play. You don't really think about results at this time. You just want to get out of there. You just want to compete and do your best every week. Yeah. A lot of time, you know, go and see your friends at the tournaments. Yeah, and it's just, it was things like that that I missed.
So through that time, were you able to play tennis at all? Were you using public courts, or what were you doing?
Yeah, public courts. So the place where I first started training was a public courts place. And yeah, when we couldn't afford to train, you know, we actually went back to that club and, yeah, started again, basically from scratch, you know, 6 hours a day on court, just using the cricket pitch as like the field we used to do the fitness on. And yeah, that's how it went for a few months.
Did you look back on it and think, well, somehow we got through that, I'm determined to now advance? What does it do for you psychologically, having gone through that and come out the other side?
It was one of those times where even just after that, it wasn't like everything was settled. I got given an opportunity to play, you know, two events. So go see how these events go. It wasn't something that was, okay, don't worry, I'm going to fund you tennis for the next 3 years. It was, I literally got given 2 weeks to play. I actually went to those couple of tournaments and won them both. And the guys, ooh, because I think at the time there was maybe only 5 or 6 guys in the world that had done that my age. And yeah, to obviously go to these events having not played and done so well, I was lucky enough that they gave me a chance, and then they kept going with it.
When you got to the semis and the mixed at Wimbledon, how did that change the world for you?
That was crazy. I think it changed more for my mum and dad. Obviously, they grew up, especially my dad, he grew up watching Wimbledon. He never actually hoped to play there, but I remember being little, it was like, oh, one day my kids will play at Wimbledon. And I always used to laugh because it was, like I say, it was never a goal of mine to do that at such a young age. I didn't really know too much about the sport, but I always remember him telling his friends that. And then, yeah, when I obviously got given the chance to compete, I think the year before, in the qualifying singles and lost tight in the last round, I was thinking, oh, you know, it's not only a loss for me, but also for like my team and my family. And then getting into the doubles with Willis and beating defending champions, that was insane. And I think that experience definitely helped.
Wimbledon does something in this country which is extraordinary, I think, in sporting terms, in the way that suddenly everyone says, did you see this or did you see that? And you were definitely, the two of you, a did you see moment.
Yeah, and that was nice. Obviously, I think Wimbledon around that time of year is when everyone just picks up a racket and, you know, get inspired, go down to the local club. And when they realise how tough it is, the rackets go away again until the year after. But no, it was nice to obviously be talked about. And then on the back of that, I actually went and won my first challenger the week after Wimbledon, after making semis of mixed. So, yeah, I used the confidence I got from there, obviously, to develop my singles game and stuff, yeah.
Can you ask about the prize money from that, which is unexpected, and sort of how that helped your year? Okay, sorry.
That's right. I guess the prize money that you won, that must really make a difference to your year, doesn't it?
Yeah, it took a lot of pressure off. It mean that, you know, me and my brother could basically not have to worry about scheduling, you know, close to home. I could actually go and play where my game was suited best. And I was able to, you know, go out there and compete, like I said, with a bit of freedom and, you know, not everything. I always play at every point. It's my last anyway, but it's okay if it doesn't happen this week. You know, good results coming. And yeah, so it definitely helped. And obviously it's never nice having, even if they're your sponsors, to keep saying, oh, can you help with this? Can you help with this? So I also had a bit of like financial freedom on my own, which helped a lot, but all of it went straight back into the tennis. There was no nice watches or cars being bought. So
keeps your feet on the ground. That's
what... Ask about Cairo.
Tell me a bit about Cairo.
Yeah, so Cairo was in 2016, I think around October, November time. And I'd pulled out. There's been a couple of people that said they'd help earlier in the year, and last minute for some reason they couldn't, so they had to back out. And on the circuit, you get three late withdrawals or two late withdrawals before you get a big fine. And someone said they'd help, couldn't help last minute. I was like, we don't have the $500 to say let's not play Cairo, but we didn't have enough for the hotel either. So I was like, I'm playing well. You know, I think at the time I was maybe 10 in the world or 12 in the world juniors. Like, let's go. Let's just go. Let's see what happens. And so, yeah, I think we went there with like $200. And obviously with the futures prize money and stuff, I left with like $3,000 after winning back-to-back weeks. And I paid the hotel. And yeah, so that was, again, one of those moments where you sit home, you pay the $500 you don't have. And but my ranking went, I think, from around 1,000 up inside 500 before the end of the year. And that put me back in the mix with everyone and got my name out there into the world as, you know, one of the 98s to watch.
So what's the next tournament that you've got coming up?
The next tournament is Nottingham Challenger event. That's where I actually played my first Challenger event, where I was given the wild card by Paul Hutchins in 2014. Yeah.
It's a local tournament for you.
Yeah, that's the local one. So that's the only week of the year I actually get to stay at home. And yeah, like my dad, you know, all my family, even some of my cousins that never really see me play before, always try to make the trip down. And so it's different because even when you play at Wimbledon, you know, there's a lot of British people there obviously supporting you, but you don't really know any of them. So when obviously it's people you know and who actually really care about you, then it's great that they can make the trip. Yeah.
And it's a great venue as well. It's really intimate. The crowd seem to go quite nuts as well. It's one of those tournaments where I've seen reactions where I've been, oh, this is a tennis tournament.
Yeah, the tennis is really big in the Midlands. I think up until maybe the age of like 14 or something, we always produce the best players around the UK. I think it's just because tennis is so accessible and there's a lot of little clubs where you can start. And yeah, there's no real pressure on. You know, you learn to love the game at a young age, you know, with your friends going to hit balls. Yeah, so they always do a good job, those places.
So I just want to take you back to another little area. You mentioned being coached by your brother. Tell me a little bit more about him and your relationship.
Yeah, Kurt's my best friend. There's only 3 years between us. So we're really close. Growing up, we did everything together. I think there was one period, unless we were sick, we didn't miss a day for like 6 years, and we were practicing every day together, playing the same tournaments. Yeah, so for a lot of people, I imagine it's tough for their siblings to coach them and, you know, to switch off, as in they're not brother and sister or brother and brother anymore, they're brother and coach or player and coach. But for me, it's always been easy because before my brother was coaching me, it was my sister, and before my sister, it was my dad. So it's always been in the family for me.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask, how easy is it to separate brother from coach, coach from player? But by the sounds of it, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it's easy for me. I guess a lot of times you just have to tell yourself that, you know, no one's going to want you to do better than your family. So everything they say is genuine, and, you know, you may argue, but it's not because obviously they don't want you to succeed. They just really want it, and sometimes they want it more than you. And I don't think, you know, that's ever a bad thing. Yeah, and they're not doing it for, it's not, you know, for financial gain or, you know, something like that. It's literally just because they love you and they want to see you do well. So yeah, that's what I learned when I was really young.
Going on tour and being on the circuit can be quite a lonely place for a player, especially if they've got a coach who's 30 years different in age. You don't have the same sort of mental connections and what have you. That must make it a more comfortable journey.
Like I said, I've always traveled with a member of my family. So even when you're doing, you know, 2 months on the road, you're always with, you know, you're never really away from home because someone's always there. And yeah, for a lot of players, it's tough, whether it's because their parents are back home or, you know, they live abroad and train and stuff like that. So, but for me, it gives me the freedom to actually go and play, you know, 5-6 weeks in a row and not, well, obviously miss home and stuff. I miss my dogs, but it's not like I haven't seen them in ages because, you know, we FaceTime a lot and my brother's always there. So
what kind of dogs have you got?
I've got a King Charles Cavalier Spaniels. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds cool. Well, I've got a little Cocker Spaniel puppy. I'll show you photos later. Dogs is so in tennis, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, obviously, I don't know why, but my sister always wanted dogs. We used to have cats. And, yeah, when the cats passed away, sister was sad. Dad was like, okay, we'll get a dog. And then she forgot about the cat pretty fast. But, no, I'm not sure why. I think, you know, a lot of tennis is played outdoors and, like I said, it's a lot of it's used for fun, and we started on the park, and you know, it was where people used to walk their dogs and stuff. So maybe that's the connection. I'm not sure.
Great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to go for?
Yeah, just going back to when you were younger, just so we can get some stuff about that. The psychology of what you're having to go through as a teenager, because that's a lot to take on your shoulders, right? You're like, I'm the best here, I can't play.
Yeah.
So just talking about your what you were doing within. How you're trying to do it and how you're coping with it, because I think just have that determination to keep playing and playing and playing whenever you can, you know, rather than accepting your fate that is out of your control. You've gone, no, I want to do it. So just talk about that
determination and
because that the grit, get that grit in there.
I remember you used to say, oh, obviously sometimes you maybe lose this track, but you used to say, okay, let's stay on court for today like 6 hours and then just do like 3 hours of fitness, like. You know, I want to be ready. That's what you were like. You mentioned that kind of stuff as well. Do you know what I mean?
Talk about your calves.
Yeah.
They're calves right there. Yeah. See those calves.
One man and his calves. That could be the title. No, okay. Moving on.
Yeah, so talk about that stuff, because that's what I really like about it. That drive that you've got. Mm-hmm.
I left school when I was pretty early, and I had a lot of success playing tennis. So it was always something, you know, that you know you were good at. And yeah, it's obviously, it's always nice to win at anything. And, you know, in my house growing up, you know, we used to play cards, dominoes, Scrabble, you know, all these board games that were super competitive. And so I had that kind of that need to win, you know, installed in me when I was young.
Did you find that there was a drive and an inner energy?
Like I say, growing up, especially being the youngest of four, I always used to, you know, lose a lot in every game. But I just loved competing, you know, against my family. And when I found, obviously, that I couldn't do something, it didn't really matter, because I knew that I would just stick with it. And that was something, obviously, my parents taught us, that not everything is going to come easy. You know, there will be obstacles you have to overcome, and a lot of them, you know, will may be caused or won't be caused by other people, but, you know, don't let it change your goal or your end goal. You know, people have to obviously overcome adversity every day in every life, not just sport. And, you know, it's the same with injuries. Luckily, I've never really been injured badly. So for me, you know, yeah. So the time that I took off, you know, someone might have been injured. So for me, I just used it as, you know, 6 months or however long it was to, you know, just make sure I was ready. So when I did get given the opportunity, I didn't have to get ready. I was already there and I was ready to make the most of the opportunity.
Was there something about the way your father trained you at the beginning that the formative years of training seemed to have helped build you up and help you to avoid things like injuries?
Yeah, I don't think it's obviously done that much anymore, because it's not, you know, scientifically proven, but we used to play for hours. So we were always taught to try to play yourself fit. And yeah, we used to do so much running, so much conditioning work. If we weren't playing tennis, we were playing football. If we weren't playing football, we were playing cricket. We were always doing something. So we were always active. And I think, you know, I had this tolerance that even when I was tired, oh, okay, let's keep going, you know, to keep up with obviously my older cousins, you know, my brothers, everyone that was older than me. So I never thought about it as fitness when I was younger. I just thought it's just another game, and obviously the kids love games. And yeah, that was something for me where it, like I said, never felt like tennis was a job or like I was doing fitness. My dad and my mum always managed to put like a fun spin on it, so I never realized obviously the benefits I was getting until, I'm not sure they did a lot of the time either, but it was just, you know, stay active. And yeah, they promoted that lifestyle to me really when I was really young.
And do you think also, you mentioned briefly earlier about being the youngest, that actually being the youngest, you see your older siblings what they've gone through and what they've achieved, and that you learn from that, and that actually you're mimicking in a way, but something also drives you on because you really want to be as good, if not better.
Yeah, definitely. When my sister played, she was the first one to reach a good level in my family at tennis. So almost, it's not like bad to say, but everything that she or my parents did wrong with her, they kind of put right with me. And, you know, we learned so fast because my parents were blind going into tennis. Like, they never played past, like, club level. And then, obviously, Yaz, my sister, you know, played tennis for a year, was being, you know, invited on GB trips and all these things. So my parents learned a lot about rackets, and obviously helped a lot as well because Yaz was obviously the player, and Yaz was learning constantly, you know, playing matches, where to play, you know, learning the differences between the surfaces, how you should train, you know, all these things. And then Yaz passed all this information on to me. So it wasn't like, because I know a lot of the players like Casper Ruud and a few of the other guys, they had parents that played or sibling that played before them, like Alex Zverev. But for us, obviously we had never had anyone to that level, but, you know, I had my sister that had played to still a very good level for what I had achieved at the time. Yeah.
So now that you're at this stage of your career, what kind of support are you getting professionally?
One of my big sponsors, the one who I still wouldn't be playing tennis today, is called, if I didn't have them, it's called MStart. It's a Derby-based charity, and it's owned by the owner of who owns Derby County Football Club. So he basically subsidised my whole programme. And then there's a company called Moorcroft, a family friend, I think it's electrical engineering business, something like that. He contributes as well to the funds that are given by MStart. And then, yeah, obviously Adidas provide me with shoes, Lacoste provide me with kit, Technifiber rackets, and the LTA give support in things like nutritionist support. I'm always able to use the courts down here, and you know, I recently just played with a coach, but they will pay for the coach's fees and I'll cover everything else for the coach.
So what kind of coach is that? Because your brother's your coach. Do you have other coaches then? Like, who are you on court with as well today?
So today I was on court with Mark Hilton. He coaches Kyle Edmund at the minute. He was a very good player before, knows a lot about the game. And yeah, no, there's... my brother's always the coach, but a lot of times we'll bring someone in who either knows more about the tour or more about the circuit, who's done it before as well. Because obviously it is a lot of pressure for my brother to kind of take control about my career, because he's also going into it blind past challenger level, because we've never seen it. So, you know, anyone that, you know, we're not too proud to ever ask for help. You know, if someone sees something that might help, you know, we'll always be the first ones to ask and, yeah, take obviously what they have to say on board.
So you seem to be getting good support to step into the unknown continually.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's needed. Obviously, a lot of the families that have played, you know, can subsidise their programmes heavily. And, you know, for us, we're obviously really lucky that we have such a good federation. And I know, even with the federation, you know, I wouldn't be playing without my guys back home as well that, you know, fund me fully. So, yeah, I'm in a really good position now, actually, and I'm just trying to make the most of it.
Thanks for chatting to us, Jay.
Thank you.
And that's it. A miserable day, but what a fantastic day. I can't believe how much fun we had at the NTC with Jay and Francis Tiafoe. Beyond your wildest dreams. Day two, and drop shot is already going well. Well, apart from the rain, I'm just huddled under a tree here, waiting for the rain to have a little break so I can get into the car and get going back home. Oh, I hope there's another curry waiting for me. Gary's off making another call. Of course he is. He's had to have hours off not making any calls whatsoever. Right, that's it. See you when the rain stops. You've been listening to Dropshot, a narrative podcast series written and produced by me, Kerry Levy. Gary Hayes was my co-producer on the series, and when he could be bothered to turn up, also travelled across the UK to record it with me.
Taylor Hayes is Dropshot's sound engineer, while Leon Raczynski-Gorman ably assisted on several episodes. Our podcast artwork is by Matt Alabaster. And Jimmy Goodwin composed our music. If you would like to hear more about the series, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at This Is Dropshot. This has been an original production from Highway 61 and Kerry Levy.
Spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.